and welcome to the Dr. Denise Show. I'm Kathleen O'Toole. This is Dr. Denise's special carve-out series called On Staying Sane. Dr. Denise, you suggested the topic this week that we're going to tackle. Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, yes. Routines, and staying sane by having a great routine. By the way, easier said than done, right? Because sometimes we get thrown different curveballs. So yeah, I thought it'd be kind of a good thing to talk about.
So you told me we had just a little tiny talk about routines before we started. And I found this interesting that you talk a lot about routines with your patients in the office.
Well, I think when we're trying to look at our own wellness and what our day-to-day is like, you know, our words, thoughts, and actions become habits that can have us have more wellness or more illness. And when people come to see me for whatever reason, and let's say they're doing cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, I'm kind of known in my neck of the woods as the doctor who uses pulling out the prescription pad as like a last resort, but it's still an incredible tool if needed. So whether someone at the end of seeing me in the either 60-minute if they're an adult or 2-hour if they're child assessment, you know, I always ask people, what is their routine like? And so then there's this level of awareness of what, how much, like, let's say if it's a kid, where, how much studying am I doing? Am I getting my fitness in? Am I still having joy? So when we each kind of look at our own routine, it's really a way, like I look at it, like when you're building a house, it sets the foundation for the rest of your day. So I think sometimes even just talking about the power of a good routine, it really goes hand in hand with mental wellness.
When the patients start ticking off their routine to you, what are some of the things that you hear that you're like, ding, 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 ding? Oh, they've got it. They've got some good routines going.
Well, I can give you some specific examples as people have kind of rolled out of this pandemic time. A lot of teens and adults were telling me that they almost got so used to spending time in what I would call their COVID cave. And so recently some ding, 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 ding is, oh, I went to an event. Oh, I went out of my comfort zone. Oh, I started to have more fun again outside of my home. So it was like maybe a joyful time that they used to have that they're now starting to have again. So when people are adding some of more of their happy moments, and you know, this is also, I hold deep compassion for humanity right now. You know, I think that I call it like our cave, our bunker, we're coming out of our bunkers. And some people have been out of it the whole time. You might be listening going, oh, I never really, you know, had a bunker, yeah, had a cave, but it's just a specific example of doing more joyful things for yourself, good self-care, mm-hmm, and maybe being more adaptive. I think the words, when you think of routine, you think, am I being adaptive or am I being rigid? And when you think of mental wellness versus mental illness, adaptive versus rigidity are really important things to look at. Sometimes if we get too stuck in anything we're doing. So that's a really tricky thing about the 1 year later.
That is tricky. Yeah.
There's like, things about routine that are good that sound like, are you just in a boring routine or a good routine? So I think these like more colorful words and then examples, maybe you can throw some other questions at me so we can really flesh this out.
So, right. You would think, oh, a routine is good. When you have an infant, a routine works really well for many infants. And adults, you know, they might have their routine, but then you use the word rigidity, like, and mental wellness. So being too rigid with our routine isn't the recipe for success either.
Well, I think what I'd like to say is the word balance. And when we're talking about on staying sane, and, you know, we talk about embracing your neurostyle, we have to look at our own unique thrive, whatever age we are, wherever we are in the world, our background. And there's times, I think maybe we can do a deep dive today is the importance of how do we establish a new routine, maybe when we've had change, because there's times when we have so much coming at us, whether it be a new job or, you know, people, a lot of people had a hard time. A lot of my patients have had a hard time going back to full life, whether it be a full work week, or a full school week. And a lot of my really successful professionals are really vying for part-time at home, part-time. So I think the word balance, when things get out of balance, and when I talk about that, what's the right amount of sleep for each different person? What's the right good nutrition? What's the right amount of fitness? What's the right amount of meditation? What's, if you're fortunate that your cup has been satisfied and you put your own oxygen mask on, can you go and volunteer more? Can you pick up the phone and ask a friend how they are? So I think balance is really important. And I think routines help us to achieve balance. And even acknowledging when we're feeling out of balance and then taking a look at our routine can be really helpful.
So the things that you talked about, maybe getting a new job or having to go back to work full time, or even sometimes the change of seasons will bring a change in routine, whether it's that the, you know, it's not dark when you wake up anymore, or it is dark when you wake up, or now you have Fridays off, or now your student is coming home from university and now you've got a 20-something-year-old looking at you all summer. You know, there's this change of season. Memorial Day is coming up. It can make for lots of changes in routines. And sometimes that's great, and sometimes it can be stressful.
Okay, so now you're talking about it, so many examples are coming up in my mind, almost as though we're on a game show and we're spinning the wheel. Okay, so yep. In our minds, everyone, Dr. Nisa is spinning the wheel, we're on stage, dun, dun, dun. It just landed at tsunami, the tsunami of summer. So
a tsunami's coming?
No, but I want to explain
that. That's quite a change of routine.
The tsunami of summer. So for some people, when they're college kids or are coming back home, someone in my practice literally wrote an essay years back called The Tsunami. And they wrote, and they did it in such a playful way to set boundaries when their college kids were coming home, because they, as a couple, had gotten used to their home being more neat. So this really engaging, beautiful soul, and she's a comedian as well, wrote an essay kind of saying what it's like when the drawers are all open or the clothes are strewn and this. And she did such a light tsunami essay. And we didn't know if she was going to give it to her kids or not. I don't even remember what she did. But the bottom line is it prepared her for a change in routine, because part of her was excited to see her kids, but the other part's like, oh no, the house is going to be a mess. And so I think that pre-game or pre-planning, when you're going to either have company or your college kids home, and then also maybe part of the new routine, still keep your own healthy strategies with your fitness, your nutrition, but maybe allowing the home to be a mess and maybe having 1 or 2 days a week where it looks better. See, that's adaptive. It's not saying, oh, we need the house. Okay, the college kids are coming home and I'm going to be so annoyed at their mess strewn that every day at 6 o'clock it has to look clean. No, that's just not realistic. So I think that season thing, so that's the tsunami wheel. Do you want to spin the wheel or ask me a question?
What about, I mean, sometimes even, Well, a new job.
Okay. So you and I have talked about some upcoming opportunities that we're vetting individually and then together. And then this really broadens out to everyone. When you're having a new work position, let's say new work position and you have children. Okay. And we'll do it without as well, because I want to balance this out.
Okay.
But I think getting everyone, once you find out you're about to either, like I had to do this, I'm going on a trip in June, and I like to pre-plan and let my son know ahead of time. So if you are starting a new position, anyone, let your kids and your spouse know, hey, this is my start date, and then start to plan around all the ways it's going to also affect them and you. Because when we name it to claim it, the new change, I like to, you know, words are so important. I do so much cognitive behavioral therapy where if you say the word illness versus wellness, how do you feel? When you say the word I'm anxious versus concerned, how do you feel? So right. even reframing it to what concerns you can check in, do a check-in, like survey the situation. Here's my new start date. Let's say June 1st. These are the things going in. So check in with your loved ones and maybe ask them their bucket list of concerns, and then say, oh, well, this is how we can then adapt. So that you don't just go into the transition without talking about it and being as aware as we can be, because we can't plan everything.
So name it to claim it means talking about those concerns.
Yeah. Well, my son, I don't even have to tell him that. He's like, Mom, I don't want you going on a trip. I'm like, dude, I have been with you nonstop for 2 years. I'm allowed to go on a plane away from you. You know what I mean? But I said, I'm glad though that you're letting me know that you're going to miss me and that you're going to. So name it to claim it means allowing a sacred space in any sort of relationship. If there is a change of routine or something on someone's mind, to let them have the space to say it, even if you don't agree or you're like, what? I need to go. But just it's from their perception, it means something. It's their concern. So I think that can, you know, when we look at like red alert, orange alert, yellow alert, green alert, as much as we can before a transition or change of routine, we can like tick off a list of as many knowns and unknowns to plan for.
Okay. What about this scenario of a new routine, merging two households? Maybe there's a new budding relationship and you're bringing two households together.
Oh my goodness, this is making me smile. Well, I've already done that in my own current lifetime, and a lot of people have done that in my practice. And, you know, I think two households. So let's say I know some people that actually did this even during the pandemic. You know, I had people that fell in love. And I think one thing, and then, you know, everyone, if they're merging two households and they're on their own timeline, so everyone has free will. But as a doctor, I would say, if you can do as many things as possible in neutral territory to see how the different personalities get along. So once you do that, and then let's say they're about to merge into a home together, I think going and visiting, depending on the ages of the kids, like getting the kids excited about maybe the new rental or the new home, making sure that each of the parents in the respective homes carve out individual family time with each kid. And Kathleen, one of the things I find that I do in my own home is, and I recommend this with the parents, is calling it that. There might be time when you're just alone. I call it like sneaky family time, like alone in your car with the kid or taking them on an errand. When you start to call it, oh, we're going to have our alone time, that really stabilizes children, especially when they're about to have a transition if their parents have fallen in love with someone else. They want to still feel like they get alone time. I think that sacred feeling time. So in a new routine, blending a family, making sure each child is having stability of love with that parent. And then still, as you then do blend a family, that you know there's going to be hiccups. There's going to be times, whether you're a blended family or not, there might be one child in more crisis than another. And that's when times are often out of balance. That's like almost like a whole nother show. But do you see, we do as much as we can. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, I know what a really cute thing, whether you're blending a family or you're not, when you're going through a tough time and you want to like reunify, like it's a good other routine, like it's a linear. I've had people make a family flag. Yeah, where they put their name and then they almost like draw like a collage. And so it's like this unifying, like it's going to be okay. It's a symbol.
Oh, that's cool.
So people have done that. Like we're the mighty Smiths or we're the mighty Joneses. And so it's something where you feel like, you know, like go team. When there's something that's changing, it's a way to like have a unified spirit.
Love it. Well, okay. This is something, you know, that we have to tackle too. The last spin of the wheel. What about when routines change because of maybe uncoupling or death? So say, you know, this new widow, now she's doing the car maintenance and the bills and maybe the cooking that she never had to do before. You know, she's like doing both routines.
Okay, I'm going to divide this spin of the wheel into two things. So we're talking about death and loss versus like divorce. So let's do the loss. And also, you know, we're, you know, as a humanity, there's been so much loss in the last few years. I think, you know, in the world of medicine and psychiatry and psychology, there's known as like the normal. And by the way, I really have a hard time with words like normal, but we are on planet Earth. So we just have to be mindful that words come in like shades of gray. So everyone's normal is different. So the normal alleged time that someone suffers when there's a death or loss, and you lose someone is 6 months at least. So it's almost like this intense known grief period, and everyone grieves differently. So I think one of the most important things I can say to someone that's lost a loved one or something really, really tragic is to allow yourself the feeling space, let yourself cry, let yourself have your time. And this does relate back to routine. You might need to talk to your boss. Depending on where you are in the world, you might, different cultures, you know, I sometimes feel like the Western culture doesn't allow as much reverence to grieving. I think there's some cultures that really take the time to give more space and time off from work. So if you have lost someone and you're able to take personal time, and whether you do a funeral, a memorial, bury ashes, that your own ritual, and really honoring the memory of your loved one and allowing yourself your feelings and allowing yourself to not just sort of stuff your feelings in a shelf and then they might have like a complicated grief later. So allowing yourself a grief period. And then I know I have people that I know in my practice and also my personal life, there are grief groups in different parts of the world. Here in Southern Cal, I know in the Midwest, you can look up the word like grief counseling. And depending on your own neuro style, some people like one-on-one therapy. I know people that have done a group where they end up meeting other widows or widowers, and they go through that like initial grief, but then sometimes those are lifelong friendships. And you don't even 5 years out say, oh, you're not just focusing only on your loss, but you're in a similar quote-unquote life situation. So there's some comfort to some similarities, which also provides a sense of emotional relief and routine. I can talk about divorce, but before I do that, do you want to say anything about that or ask any more questions?
No, allow the feelings and know that your routine changing is, you know, the emotions are what they are to you. They're allowed. And yeah, your routine's going to change probably.
Okay, so we just spun the wheel and we're on divorce.
We're uncoupling, even a very significant relationship. Yeah,
okay. So uncoupling and divorce, I think some of the things that we're talking about are universal. What you hear throughout this show and throughout all the shows, the importance of awareness, self-love, and then if you're able to give back, altruism. So when you're decoupling or going through a divorce, it's a grief process. It's a transition. So allowing yourself your feelings is really important. On sort of a fun tongue-in-cheek note, I was out recently with someone who is newly divorced, and I've been amicably divorced. So I'll talk about it personally, then I'll jump back professional and do both. Sometimes people go through a period where it's almost like they feel so free and liberated if they got out of a relationship, but they really wanted to. I've seen people almost go to this like girls gone wild or boys, like there could be this like teenager. Like I was out and someone, I want to be really mindful. I could tell that they were at that really new stage where they were so excited to get all this male attention. And I just said to someone else, oh, they're in that phase of the, oh, I'm like newly, like the new kid on the block, ready to date. So there's different.
What do you have a name for the phase?
I mean, I was just being funny, calling it girls gone wild. But I mean, it's almost like you're regressing to like, I don't know how to say it's regressing because it sounds judgmental. But it's like that liberated time of teenage spirit or something where, oh my God, I get to date. It's like this newly free, Like you're, how about just released out of the cage, or I don't know. So there's times where people can really feel like if they were really wanting to uncouple, but then if they were the one who didn't want to uncouple, there's going to be different feelings. So whenever you're going through with the grief of the loss and death, we talked about individual and group therapy, there's the same thing. There's meetup groups. There's times when people are going through uncoupling where they're trying to find themselves again. And so I think that the divorce or uncoupling is kind of similar to the grief and death, but it's a bit different. I've seen some of that more like, okay, who am I now? How am I going to date? What do I want? And if people have kids or don't have kids, I know in the dating scene, a lot of people, if they have kids that are, you know, out of the nest, they might be wanting to attract someone else that has their level of freedom in routine. Because when you have children, you're trying to provide their routine. So it's really different if you're uncoupling or going through a divorce, if your children are still in the home or outside of the home. And I think that when the mom's happy in the household, the dad too, the kids are happy. So I think it's really important to do that self-care when you're going through uncoupling and divorce, whether you have children or not. Do you think I missed? Is there anything else about that you want to ask?
No, I think the self-care is like the golden thread of this, right? It's through the tsunami of summer. It's through the new job. It's through the merging the two households, death and loss, and uncoupling. The self-care, when the routines change, when there's that transition point, is the golden thread.
It's yes. Like,
absolutely. Goes to all of them.
Yeah, self-care is the new cool, which is one of my themes throughout the different shows this year. But I actually want to just give an example of self-care that I do as a doctor, if that's okay. When I have a lot of emergencies in my practice, which I've had recently, the new me has way more compassion for myself. The old me was taught to be Wonder Woman, put oxygen masks on everyone else first. And the new me, which came with through some wisdom, is how can I, you know, even though before the robot me really helped, always has been fortunate to help others, but the new me is more gentle. Like I'll look at my own routine or schedule of the day and I'll go, is this an imbalance or out of balance? And for me and for everyone listening, I want you to have your own version of mind medicine where you integrate happiness, play, lightness, even if it's a few moments in the day. It could be like opening up your patio door and like really smelling spring. It can be getting really excited about your walk. It could be picking your favorite song that's going to kind of calm your nervous system down. The deep breathing we've talked about, I think box breathing. So for me, because I really, really love and care about my patients, that when they're suffering, at times I feel their feelings from a distance. So my new version of me is allowing a greater self routine on the days when it's the most intense. Like even going, oh, you might need an extra. Or like even when I'm tired, like this week I have my mom, I'm so excited. Like when you have company and you have people visiting, my mom knows how important my swimming is. She can see that even if I go to the pool for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, I come back like a new human being. And I think it depends on what generation you are or how you've been raised. But some people might be like, oh, you're selfish. You're going to the pool even when you have company. But no, hopefully the new way we're all thinking after this pandemic about immune system, self-care, and the importance of routine is that self-care is the new cool. And that in order to go and do that, then I'm going to host better. I'm going to be like, yay, can I get you a coffee? Or what can I do? Because I refilled my cup. And I have to admit, I'm really guilty of being more of the frenetic care for others versus myself. And I know that's not everyone's challenge, but being aware of your own routine and what that looks like is your own checklist, your own scorecard for health.
So one of our tenants of our On Staying Sane Carve Out series, they're really well done. I think the our artist is incredible, but we talked about fresh air and good sleep and meditation and eating well and exercising. But also when there's a change of routines, two more tenets come in, and that's that we haven't touched upon yet. And that's thinking positive and always learning. And when the always learning is really important when there's a new routine, because whether it's, you know, now I'm dealing with death and loss and I'm learning about some of these new tasks I have to do, or, you know, the kids are coming for summer. There's learning about what they did for the last year in university. It's like it's hand in hand with a change of routines.
Absolutely. It's really interesting.
And then the thinking positive too, you know, because when you see that change of routine coming, it can be daunting. And, you know, you and I had a discussion offline about this, but, you know, just manifesting good thoughts and putting them out there, and this is going to go great, and reminding yourself that there might be a stumble, but it's all going to be divinely, right, Denise?
Oh, it's all divinely fucked up perfect.
Right. So it's going to go the way it's supposed to go, and there's beauty in that.
So Kathleen, I think you also brought up a really important point that I haven't mentioned. Well, I've kind of throughout talked indirectly about positive thinking. So the two things you just said were always learning and positive thinking. So positive thinking can also be, how do you have inner peace even when you're suffering? Because sometimes the word positive, I think you brought it to my attention in one of our other series when I said something about radical happiness. I mean, sometimes
radical infinite happiness.
Yeah, that's like, holy cow.
It's a tall order for me.
Yeah. And so being aware, even in this moment of hearing you say things, you've helped me to even always, like, I'm always learning. I think it's always important to be curious. I'm always learning about different people's neurostyle and how a word can be perceived. So I'm really like almost like fortunate, because what I do professionally is I help people look at their challenges and their sufferings and get to that point of inner peace. I'm going to give you a precise example. Someone was sharing that they have a relative that has dementia, and they're going in and out of being present on earth versus possibly traveling to other realms, however you want to believe, with dementia, you know, being here for a moment and not. And when they were telling me the whole story and how much they've really held sacred space for that family situation, and that somehow this person and their loved one are managing at a really unbelievable high level of dementia, not being in assisted care. And when I heard the person talking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, what a blessing that you have been a part of this integrity of routine to allow this person to have as much time being independent with their loved one, and also validating them of their role. Because it's super tiring when you're also helping certain people to have routines. Not all individuals are created equal. You could have a child that has sensory issues. You could have a parent that has dementia or health issues. But if you're that loving person, that's whether you want to helping with the positive thinking or the inner peace routine, that's golden. So there's times when you feel like you're suffering or someone you love suffering, but then you're like, wait a second, they're having integrity of being independent in their routine, and I'm part of that. And someone said to me this week, are you kidding me? I never even thought of it that way. I'm like, yeah, you're a superhero. You're a rock star. You know, you're helping people you love to do this. And she's like, oh my God, that helps me. And so even that, Kathleen, is like a reframing of something that can feel like an absolute suffering, but looking at it in a unique way.
Wow. I'm going to re-listen to this when the podcast releases.
Well, oh, the other tip and tool, by the way, everyone, is create sacred spaces with your friends. Kathleen and I did that. We're not going to go into the details because we have some upcoming new routines for ourselves. And I wanted to make sure, because she's my friend, but we're also doing work together. When you create boundaries of communication, and you say to someone, okay, for this part of the call, can we just make this call about our personal life and then our next call about work? And if we need to troubleshoot. So that's a part of almost like preparing for that moment of communication. So that's a form of awareness and mindful awareness. Do you see? Because sometimes if you just pick up the phone with someone, you're like, oh my God, what am I getting right now?
Yeah. Yeah. So well, there's not too many people who have this like deep, profound relationships like us and then work together. There are many, but it's not an everyday occurrence. But that also works in any kind of relationship, like setting the boundaries, taking the pulse, you know.
And I think there's another word, if I can just interrupt what you're talking, that's one of the most important things about our unique routines and whatever we're doing. And this ties in with the word awareness, but ready? Be intentional. And how are we intentional? It's when we can check our own thermometer of our feeling state in that moment. And we can not only have a framework of a routine, but we can be adaptive when we have like almost like fireballs thrown at us.
Wow. I'm even writing this down, everybody.
Well, I have to tell you, I looked at my routine today and I'm like, oh no, I need to change this part of my routine. This is not a good thing for my mental health after all the emergencies I've had this week. And so I gracefully gave people options. The other thing I was going to say is if you need to change a business meeting, if you need to change a personal meeting, have a graceful way of being intentional with that other person's neurostyle so you can work better together as friends or in the work environment or spouses. Do a mindful pause and be intentional. And that way you actually end up having a more vulnerable and a close relationship when you check in with your pulse, but then you let them have their pulse. And then you come up with a collaborative win-win to shift the routine.
Wow. Okay. On that note, that was awesome. This is like little tiny treasures that Dr. Denise just keeps giving us. Did we exhaust you? I mean, I know you're not exhausted, but did we exhaust the topic? Of course not. But was there something left that you really wanted to say? That be intentional is awesome.
This is more of my playful side. So in order to get through some days on planet Earth when our routines seem like we're like, how do we stay sane? You know, this is the whole idea of the show. I have different songs and different things. I'm like, when I'm like feeling like, ah, oh my God, it's Armageddon on planet Earth, I listen to music and I have little fun life hacks. So like if I would just challenge everyone to find things that make them smile, like sometimes I wear like a purple hat at drop off, or I wear like an outfit that makes me happy and I don't really care what anyone else thinks. And my son's like, oh my God, are you really picking me up? This is during the pandemic in a row. But I'm like,
I know, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
The purple hat might make you happy, but your kids of like teenage kids, not so much.
Well, I was intentional. This is a fun example. I said to my son, I go, how do you feel when I pick you up at the bus stop in a robe? He's like, Mom, I think you're like the coolest because that means you just went swimming and I know that makes you happy. I go, Kieran, but I want you to know, honey, if it ever embarrasses you, just let me know and I'll make sure I run home or I put a little dress on. And I don't always, but it's like that's another example of still being fun and feeling liberated, even when you might feel trapped. Sometimes you feel trapped. So it's another intentional happy hack.
Happy hack. All right.
Oh my gosh. By the way, thank you for always asking such curious questions. I feel like I'm always like, oh, what is she going to ask me? And I'm really grateful for how you ask the questions.
Well, I love the image of the wheel spinning, you know, that game show wheel with all these different things that can make a change in routines. And like our lovely minds and souls just have to find that self-care and cope.
Well, and I even, before we end, what you just said, so I like to give that visual because it gives people the visual. I did that intentionally, that we have choices. Sometimes when we're having information overload or a lot of frenetic anxiety, we feel paralyzed. Like, how do we get out of it? So that visual of the wheel is very helpful. Then there's times when like, I'm like, WTF, did this really just happen? And I start doing, my patients know this because I do this even on session. I'm like, dun, dun, dun. oh my God, the call came in. Dun, dun, dun. Someone just yelled at me. Dun, dun, dun. The vacuum's not. So I do these like dun, dun, duns to almost like make me feel validated. Like, did that moment just really happen? And then how do I go moment to moment for more of an inner peace? So I have all these like visuals, tools. It's a multidimensional wellness hacks. So thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Dr. Denise.